Hi, I'm Chris Wallace.
And I'm Toby Davey.
And today we are looking at coming-of-age movies, most specifically Kicking and Screaming from 1995. It's a movie directed by Noah Baumbach. It was written by Baumbach himself with Bo Burnham, and it stars Josh Hamilton, Eric Stoltz, and Parker Posey.
I don't need to go to a campus bar to be reminded of my lack of success with a bunch of thrill-seeking, snotty college kids.
That's us. We're like celebrities to them.
No, we were celebrities. Now going back would be like doing Hollywood Squares. I'm too nostalgic, I'll admit it.
We graduated 4 months ago. What can you possibly be nostalgic for?
I'm nostalgic for conversations I had yesterday. I've begun reminiscing events before they even occur. I'm reminiscing this right now. I can't go to the bar because I've already looked back in it in my memory, and I didn't have a good time.
Yeah, this is a sort of, I suppose, a film that really sort of focuses on a bunch of 20-something guys hanging around their college just after graduation and still keeping up in that sort of life that they had before graduation. And very interesting. I think it's really nice in some ways because not only are they looking at their time sort of going forward and still being in that college kind of youth kind of thing with lots of drinking, games and jokes and all sorts of other things, but I like the sort of flashbacks of the main two characters, I would say, Grover and Jane, and their relationship.
I mean, the coming of age part of it really comes from a point that these four main characters that we're following are completely unable to move on from university. The movie starts at a place where we see their graduation party. We hear about them talking about their plans for the future and what they're going to go on and do. And obviously we hear that Jane is moving to Prague. So she's leaving Grover behind. And then we jump forward, I think it's 3 months. And then we realize that all four of these guys have not managed to move on. None of them have moved away from university. Even the guy who got a job straight out of university can't move away from his friends. And they end up spending all their time sitting around the same bars, doing the same things, hanging out with the same people. And it's one of those really ponderous films where everyone's talking about their situation without actually doing anything.
Going back to those flashbacks, because it focuses on Grover and Jane's relationship and how it all started back in college. He was in, I think, a writing lecture and stuff, and he didn't really notice her, but she really ridiculed a bit of his writing. And then they've sort of met up in the Penguin Bar, which is a sort of bar they used to go to. And I thought just that was just nice how that was played out.
The teacher points to Jane.
I'd like to say first up that the prose is remarkable. It's beautifully written.
Lester watches her with a smile.
However, I've noticed that the characters in Grover's stories spend all their time discussing the least important things. You know, like what to have for dinner, or who's the best-looking model in the Victoria's Secret catalog. I don't know. To me, the story just seemed slight. It had the feeling of being written in one night.
I graduated in 1996, so this sort of takes me back to those days. And I'm not to say that I had the same sort of life as the guys in this movie did, but I do remember, you know, sort of those groups of friends. And also, you know, we got to think that this was back in the time before social media, and I think I only had a mobile phone just as I was graduating. So it was quite nice to see the sort of how things were played out in that time with answer phones and landlines and no social media. So it would probably be a very different movie if it was made today.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think the themes are universal, this inability to move on, because you've just spent 4 years or however long with these people, and it's difficult to sort of break those ties that bind. You've really honed in on the Grover-Jane relationship, whereas I think for me, the driving thrust of this story was the relationship between the four guys and their inability to separate themselves from each other and those philosophical conversations they were getting into.
I enjoyed that sort of life that they were having and the jokes, but for me it was just nice, I think, the story of Grover and Jane and how that was played out. And we didn't know whether she was having a good time in Prague or not. And I thought that was just a nice sort of thinking about, he was thinking she was having a great time, but was she having a great time? We never really knew that.
No, and those answer machine messages, there was a sort of desperation. And was it a desperation from Jane's point of view of hope that Grover will phone her back or that she'll be able to get him on the phone? Or was it a desperation that there was something else going on in her life and he was so blinded by the fact that she left him that he wasn't willing to pick up the phone and comfort her or deal with any of that?
Yeah, and he was still sort of, I suppose, finding his way a little bit, you know, sort of, you know, going for drinks, meeting up with her girls and stuff and things like that, but still had this thing for Jane.
Was that the beep? Hi, Grover, it's me, Jane. How are you? I'm over here right now futzing around Prague. Always feel like I should say something important when I call long distance, but I don't really have anything to say right now. Let's see, I was in Poland for a while if you tried to reach me, and I finally read War and Peace, which was good.
Noah Baumbach has gone on to be quite famous for writing these ponderous and philosophical movies. He wrote Marriage Story, which was up for an Oscar, which was about a breakdown of his own marriage. He also wrote Fantastic Mr. Fox, which was directed by Wes Anderson, and it was an adaptation from the book by Roald Dahl. But more famously than that now, I would have to say, is that he co-wrote Barbie with his now wife and long-term girlfriend and the common star of a lot of his movies, Greta Gerwig. But he was just 25 when he wrote this film, and I think there's a lot of his personal anxieties and tropes and inability to move away from university that are in this film.
And I suppose we must talk a little bit about the soundtrack, because I really quite liked it, and I noticed there was a Blondie track in there. There was the Pixies. And I remember at that time I was very much introduced to the Pixies by a friend at college and stuff, and very much into them. But it was a good soundtrack.
It was. I noticed in the background of one scene as well, there was They Might Be Giants, who were a bit of a soundtrack to my youth as well. I was a massive fan of all of the movies that came out around about that time. And they all had cracking soundtracks, and conversation was king, and the movie was more about the relationships between people as opposed to the progress of the storyline or the driving narrative.
I suppose it's probably difficult to make that sort of film nowadays, because when you think of films that are on at the moment, it's more fast-paced, and I think whether you could do that again now, I don't think so.
In the large, dim backyard, Grover walks across a small bridge lined with lush foliage. In the middle of a terrace, lights illuminate a lengthy pool. A man chats up a blonde girl near the ledge.
Jane, I knew you'd win a fiction prize. You're a brilliant writer. Would you like to dance?
Oh, I would, Lester, but I find you irritatingly attractive.
Coming from somebody who's been to a lot of audio-described theatre performances where you get a little bit more pre-show information, so you get a bit more about the scene setting and stuff and things like that, and the clothes and costumes and all that kind of stuff. And that's something that I think's lacking a little bit in AD for film and TV anyway. But I thought it was really good. There are some nice bits. I mean, in the graduation bit at the beginning, there was some nice sort of description of how the sort of light that was being reflected from the pool was hitting, I think, may have been Grover's face or something like that. That was quite nice and done. And there was, you know, sort of some good descriptions and stuff and things. I mean, there were some scenes where I just would have liked a little bit more colour for me, because the Penguin Bar, I had an idea in my head, and that just came from me going, memories of bars I've been to. And you know, I didn't get that in the audio description, but they didn't have time for that. And when Grover and Jane were in the bar and she sort of picks up her coat from the back of the chair and leaves kind of stuff, because she's got to go pretty quickly, although she's pretty drunk at the same time. You know, I would have liked a bit more description of the coat she was wearing, but, you know, there's not time to do that. So I think a lot of film and TV AD, you're using your memory and stuff and things to add things in. But not to say the audio description wasn't that good. It was pretty good.
And was the reason there wasn't so much time for the AD because there was so much dialogue in this film?
I think that's probably true. You know, there's the dialogue, and also there's the music that was in the background as well. And you don't want to sort of overgo that. You don't want to, you know, description shouldn't bang into the dialogue and everything else. And less is more in a way. So, you know, with description, you just have little bits of description to add in to give you that picture.
Well, thanks very much for diving into Kicking and Screaming from 1995 with me, Toby.
Yeah, and I would say that, you know, for people of maybe my age, it's quite nice to go back to those days of 1995.
I enjoyed the movie. I'm glad you did too.
Thank you, Chris.
Kicking and Screaming, directed by Noah Baumbach, is currently available in audio description on Netflix in the UK.